Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence.
One of the things I don't think I'll ever understand is why I wear jackets to do these things, because they never stay on. It's usually like the first thing I do when I step up on stage is take my jacket off. So I don't know why I do that. But to be invited, first off, I need you guys to understand, to be invited to stand in a pulpit that God has trusted to another man is an absolute honor. To be invited back within 6 months of filling in another man's pulpit is just that much greater of an honor. So, Travis, I appreciate you trusting me with the ability to do this. Anytime I get to be here is awesome. Thank you guys for coming back, because some of y'all were here last time and you still just said, hey, you know what? Let's go back. To put a little more pressure on you, though, sometimes, you know, you're preaching to another man's congregation, so it's a little more stressful when he's sitting right there. So I appreciate the heads up, because back in December, somebody called me and didn't give me a heads up they were going to be in the audience and then was there. And so just throws you all off. You feel like you can't find your feet. And so the goal for this morning is to just kind of continue where you guys have been. I know we've been walking through the book of 1 Samuel. So we're going to be in 1 Samuel. We're going to cover the whole of chapter 4, which honestly makes me kind of sad, because chapter 5 is so much cooler. Chapter 5 is one of my is my favorite passage in 1 Samuel, one of my probably top 5 in all of the Old Testament. And so I hope, my hopes for this morning is that we can lay an awesome groundwork so that Travis can absolutely slam dunk next week when he goes into chapter 5, because it is hands down one of the coolest chapters to me in this entire book. But in order to do that, we have to kind of step back and look and realize that chapter 5 is not possible without chapter 4. And chapter 4 kind of sucks. It's very, very sad. It is a tragedy in chapter 4. For those of you that have not been reading ahead and haven't read chapter 4, buckle up, because, man, it's just depressing sometimes. I'm going to go ahead and apologize. I've been a little bleh all week. That's why my wife and my daughter are not here with me this morning. We've all kind of been under the weather. But let me ask you, are there any Indiana Jones fans in the house? I like the Indiana Jones movies, right? I like Harrison Ford. I know him better as Han Solo, but that's okay. We can still be friends. And while I do appreciate the franchise and I do like the movies when I watch them, I have to admit that I can't vividly remember sitting down and watching one of them all the way through beginning to end. I know the important parts. I know that if you need to stop him, just throw a snake at him, right? I know that he's got a little friend named Data that does all, Dr. Jones, like all of the important things. And one of the scenes that I do vividly remember is in the movie Raiders at the very end, when the Germans open up the Ark of the Covenant and faces melt and all that kind of stuff. And I mention this to talk about the importance of the Ark of the Covenant, because as we go into chapter 4 here, it is going to be very important that we understand the importance of this Ark. And I lost my spot. Hold, please. Remember, if you will, right? Any of us that have talked about or studied the Ark of the Covenant, we understand that to Israel at this point, the Ark is the physical representation of God's presence. Where the ark is, there also is God. Right? Are we all on the same page here? And so much so that the Israelites could not even touch the ark without falling dead immediately. The Ark of the Covenant is very important to the Jews, because the Ark of the Covenant is, in their worldview, where the presence of God resides. It is the highest piece of spiritual, tangible evidence that they have. And that's important for us to remember, because as we go into chapter 4, something terrible is going to happen. And so for today, there are three things that I want us to look at, and then like a minor tragedy, minor in like air quotes, because it's actually terrible. Three things and then a minor tragedy that we want to talk about that wraps up and sums up the whole of 1 Samuel chapter 4. The three questions we want to look at is, what caused the tragedy? Why did the tragedy occur? What was the tragedy? And why did it happen in this way? And then the minor tragedy at the end that we'll talk about that's not actually as minor as some people might think. So what caused this tragedy? And this is why this is going to kind of review what we've already talked about, or what you guys have already talked about as you've walked through this book. What caused this tragedy? Failure to honor God. Shown in chapter 2 is Hophni and Phinehas, the two sons of Eli, would go in as and take portions of offering greater than what they deserved. They would go in and they would take before it had been fully rendered and given unto God. These are priests. These are the sons of the prophet at the time. The ones that should have been held to the highest standard. And yet they are the ones disrespecting God in the highest order. Not only was there a failure to honor God, but there was a lack, or there was lax spiritual leadership and discipline, because Eli let it happen. You're looking at the prophet of God allowing his sons, his own household, to disrespect the God that called him to be a prophet in the first place. And he does nothing. Eli allows it over and over and over again. So what caused this tragedy? A lack of spiritual leadership and honor for the God that people are serving. And you're going to see now, not just that it's not just in the priesthood, but because of this, as we get into what it is and why it happened this way, that it trickles down from the top like a waterfall. It starts at the top, but it ends up at the bottom. Everybody's affected by this lack of spiritual discipline. These two situations are what sparked this fire, this absolute tragedy that we watch unfurl in chapter 4. So now we get into, what is this tragedy? Let's read with me chapter 4. We're going to read the first three verses, or like two and a half. We're not going to read all of verse 3 because it moves into my next point. 1 Samuel chapter 4, starting in verse 1. Thus the word of Samuel came to all of Israel. Now Israel went out to meet the Philistines in battle and camped beside Ebenezer, while the Philistines camped at Aphek. The Philistines drew up in battle array to meet Israel. When the battle spread, Israel was defeated before the Philistines, who killed about 4,000 men on the battlefield. And when the people came into the camp, the elders of Israel said, "Why has the Lord defeated us today before the Philistines? Let us take to ourselves from Shiloh the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, that it may come among us and deliver us from the power of our enemies." That was all of verse 3. I just mistyped in my notes. So what happens? What starts this tragedy? First off, a loss in a battle, right? The Philistines are like the Joker to Israel's Batman throughout most of the Old Testament. They're the bad guys. They're the big bad enemy that were always lurking somewhere relatively close, right? And they're defeated. Israel loses 4,000 soldiers in a single battle. That's a lot of dudes. And so what does Israel do? Call for the ark. Go to Shiloh, bring this ark that is the very presence of God, the very symbol that shows us where God's presence resides here in this age, and bring it amongst our soldiers. Logically, yeah, absolutely do that. Except, remember, the lack of spiritual leadership right? They're not calling for the ark because they believe it is the presence of God. They're calling for the ark because at this point in Israel's history, it's nothing but a good luck charm. At this point in Israel's history, they don't see the ark as the literal embodiment of what God's power can do amongst them, but instead, hey, we need a free wind. Anybody athletic, anybody like was an athlete in high school and had superstitions? Like, I had a weird one, okay? Like, growing up, we played baseball, and like the Friday night before opening day for Little League Baseball, like, you always slept in your jersey at my house. At least I did, and my brother. That was our thing. It was our superstition. Look, the Braves are having a terrible season this year, and I take full responsibility because every year on opening day, I wear the same thing to work, and this year I forgot when opening day was and did not. And so the Braves going 0-7 in the first series and being 8 games back, wherever, you know, however many. It's my fault, right? Because superstition. Good luck. That's how Israel sees the ark at this point. We're losing the battle because we didn't wear the right outfit to battle today. We didn't lose the battle because I got the wrong flavor of sunflower seeds. I have a friend that does plays with us, or used to. He isn't in the area anymore. But would always drink an apple juice before opening night to the point that literally 5 minutes before a show one night, Brent Ari Lee runs across the street to Cook's Market to get an apple juice because he forgot. But that's the thought process that Israel has with the ark. Not let's call upon God, ask him what we're doing wrong, and change our ways. No, call upon the ark because it's our good luck charm. We just forgot to bring it with us. So what happens? Let's continue. In verse 4, so the people sent to Shiloh, and from there they carried the ark of the covenant of the Lord of hosts, who sits above the cherubim, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, hey, those names sound familiar, were there with the ark of the covenant of God. As the ark of the covenant of the Lord came into the camp, all of Israel shouted with a great shout, so that the earth resounded. And when the Philistines heard the noise they said, "What noise is this great shout in the camp of the Hebrews?" Then they understood that the ark of the Lord had come into the camp. The Philistines were afraid, for they said, "God has come into the camp." And they said, "Woe to us, for nothing like this has happened before. Woe to us. Who shall deliver us from the hand of these mighty gods? These are the gods who smote the Egyptians with all kinds of plagues in the wilderness. Take courage and be men, O Philistines, or you will become slaves to the Hebrews, as they have been slaves to you before. Be men and fight." First off, let's just stop here. I didn't have this stopped here or in my notes at all. But I need us to like gather and realize something. The Israelites, the people of God, the chosen people of God, are using the Ark of the Covenant as a good luck charm. And the Philistines are terrified because they know the God that Israel serves. My daughter right now is in love with the movie Prince of Egypt. And I ain't mad at it because that's an amazing movie, okay? But it's referenced right here. The Philistines sitting in their camp are like, "Dude, I'm terrified. This is the same God." You remember what they did to Israel or Egypt? You remember what this God did to Egypt? What's he going to do to us? So the Philistines fought, and Israel was defeated. But we brought the ark. It was in our midst. The presence of God was with us. But Israel was defeated. Every man fled to his tent, and the slaughter was very great. For there fell of Israel 30,000 foot soldiers. And the ark of God was taken, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, died. So what's the tragedy? Well, first off, the first battle loss, 40,000, that's a lot, or 4,000, that's a lot of guys, that sucks. Second battle, in the presence, what they thought was the presence of God, that's another loss. 30,000 foot soldiers, we're at 34,000 Israelites dead in this chapter alone. But the worst part is the ark is taken. The Philistines don't just crushingly defeat Israel. They take their most prized spiritual possession back with them. Hearken back. Don't know why I said it that way. It just makes me feel smart to say the word hearken. When we spoke about the importance of the ark, when we spoke about how important it was, and now it's gone, grasp that with me. In the tabernacle, right? The temple. The Ark of the Covenant is placed in the Holy of Holy. The most holy place in all of Israel is that's where the Ark resides. It is gone. Taken by the enemy of Israel. Because Israel had lost sight of the God of the ark. And were looking to the ark as a god. They broke commandment number one. It was right there. There was a copy inside. Commandment number one. They stopped seeing the ark as what it was. They started seeing the ark as God himself and worshiped the ark more than they worshiped the God of the ark. And because of that, God allowed them to be defeated. So why? Why did God do it in this way? If we learn nothing else from the book of Judges, it's that Israel oftentimes needs a wake-up call. And it's usually cyclical. Like, it happens a lot. I'm just as guilty of it, okay? I need a wake-up call, and it's cyclical. It's good. It's not so good. Oh, no, I'm separated. Hey, here's somebody to bring you back. All right, we're good again, right? That's the whole cycle of Judges. That's how Israel works. That's how all of us work, if I'm honest. This was Israel's wake-up call. Eli had failed at his job as prophet. He had dropped the ball. Luckily, we already have Samuel being called. We already have Samuel being raised up to be the next prophet. And God had a promise to keep. God had a promise to keep. Not to Israel, but to Eli. Because God told Eli, there will not be a man in your house that grows old, right? He told Eli, yes, I chose your family to do this. You drop the ball, no more. And in the most horrific way possible, God is enacting his judgment on Eli's family. But not just Eli's family, all of Israel because of the failure of Eli. That's an important thing. I need us to kind of gather here on that. Israel is being punished for the failure of Eli. Because Eli is the spiritual leader of Israel. The people we are allowing to spiritually lead us, not Travis, he's doing a great job, I'm sure. Or even Logan. I don't know Logan very well, but I trust Travis, and if he, like, they're on the same page, y'all are doing great. But I'll tell you a story. I know a guy. I know someone personally who really, really liked a pastor. said that they brought their peace of mind to a higher elevation. Kept their mood very even, Stephen Furtick. I needed one person to get it. I needed one person to get it. And when I had to have the conversation with this person, hey, that pastor is a heretic. They were blown away. It's not just about like Sunday mornings and Sunday nights, because I think these two guys are doing an awesome job. What it's about is the music you listen to when you leave here. What it's about is the sermons that you may listen to on a Tuesday rather than a Sunday or a Wednesday. Because those people do have an effect. Those people do have some sort of spiritual leadership on your life. And choosing to listen to these people can have a grander effect than you realize. Because look, again, all of Israel is being judged, is being punished for the failure of spiritual leadership of Eli, because the failure of Eli has spread through the whole nation of Israel. The failure of Eli is not confined to the walls of Eli's house. The failure of Eli affected the entire nation of Israel. And so it's important for us to know that, one, what we hear, the people we listen to, matter. That God will have his vengeance. The last point that we really need to look at, the final point in this minor, remember, tragedy that we talked about, is going to take us through the end of chapter 4. So read with me, if you will, 12 through 22. Now a man of Benjamin ran from the battle line and came to Shiloh the same day with his clothes torn and dust on his head, showing that he's in mourning. Dust on the head and torn clothes, that is a sign of mourning in the Jewish faith, right? When he came, behold, Eli was sitting on his seat by the road, eagerly watching, because his heart was trembling for the ark of God. So the man came to tell it in the city, and all the city cried out. When Eli heard the noise of the outcry, he said, "What does the noise of this commotion mean?" The man came hurriedly and told Eli. Now Eli was 98 years old, nice, spry young man. His eyes were set so that he could not see. The man said to Eli, "I am the one who came from the battle line. Indeed, I escaped from the battle line today." And he said, "How did things go, my son?" Then the one who brought the news replied, "Israel has fled before the Philistines. There has been a great slaughter among the people, and your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the ark of God has been taken." When he mentioned the ark of God, Eli fell off the seat backwards beside the gate, and his neck was broken, and he died, for he was old and heavy. Thus he judged Israel for 40 years. Now his daughter-in-law, Phinehas' wife, was pregnant and was about to give birth. And when she heard the news that the ark of God was taken and that her father-in-law and her husband had died, she knelt down and gave birth, for her pains had come upon her. And about that time, her death, the woman who stood by her said to her, "Do not be afraid, for you have given birth to a son." She said, she did not answer or pay attention. She called the boy Ichabod, crying, "The glory has departed from Israel, because the ark of God was taken. And because of her father-in-law and her husband," she said, "the glory has departed from Israel, for the ark of God is taken." Something I want us to kind of gather here, right? First off, Eli sitting in his seat, doing his thing, blind, old. And the news comes to him. Hey, the first thing he hears is what? "Your sons have died. I have a daughter at home. You walk through those doors and tell me those words, I'm going to crumple. All right, I'm done. Don't talk to me for the next forever." And yet, when does Eli fall in shock. When this man of Benjamin looks at him and says, the ark of God was taken. Which tells me something that makes everything we've already said about Eli even worse. He knew where his priority was supposed to be. Eli knew in this moment the important thing was not his two sons that had gone with the ark to the battlefield. It was that the ark was the important part. The presence of God was the important part. And yet, we've disgraced it. We've defiled it. We dropped the ball. Eli falls, and at 98 years old, it breaks his neck. Tragedy. Israel's just lost its prophet. It's lost its prophet and the ark all in the same day. Not only did it lose the ark, it lost the ark to its greatest enemy there is. And so how do we sum up, how do we close up all of chapter 4? Vengeance is mine, says the Lord. We serve a jealous God. We do. Because He sees value in all of us. He has a plan for all of us and has something in store for all of us. All He asks is that we listen and follow. And yet, for whatever reason, we find that hard to do. Don't worry, we're not special. A lot of people find it hard to do. Israel found it hard to do. And it cost them dearly. And he doesn't just desire part of us. He desires every part of us. He's given each of us a specific call. Instructions on what He expects out of us. And only through Him can His glory be shown in many multitudes. Each of us have different skills. Each of us have different talents. God's calling us to use those. But how are we using them? Are we allowing our talents to become an idol? Are we allowing ourselves to focus on what we can do, focusing on what we can do instead of what God can do through us? Are we focusing on the ark more than the God of the ark?
Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.